For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So I'm very happy to have this evening as our speaker, Laura Ross, who's our head doan and member of the board and urban conservation director at the Field Museum. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
So I wrote this talk, which I'll get to in a minute, but I had this odd experience yesterday that I couldn't stop thinking about when we were just sitting. So and I can't think of who else to tell this to, so I'm going to say this and then I'll get to the talk. So yesterday I came here for the board meeting, and we had a good board meeting, and I just remember coming in and noticing this sweet little drawing of a dragon that some child had done at some event. And then I went from the board meeting over to the Tai Chi Center, and we had Paint Your Dragon. So I went and I painted a dragon, and it's sort of fun and supporting the Tai Chi Center. And then I went to Grace Lutheran Church in River Forest because they have cantata vespers there, and they have professional soloists and a fabulous chorus and a beautiful space. And it turned out it was the Feast of St. Michael, and the entire hour and 40 minutes was about the evil dragons that they were killing. It was so shocking. And I had this dragon on the front seat of my car because the paint hadn't quite dried, and I was in the parking lot with all those other cars. And anyway, it was odd because I felt really marginalized, I guess, is the word that comes. I mean, I don't have a real point to this story. It just was a very odd and not very comfortable experience. I felt like I was an imposter. But anyway, it's very different here. I always feel like I'm about as comfortable as I ever get at home in the Zendo. So, last week on September 27th, I had a birthday. I turned 65 years old, which means in our culture, I am officially old. It took me by surprise, you know. It's not like I didn't know it was coming. I mean, every year you celebrate, and you like get 1 year closer. But it did. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about that tonight, and how I'm. I mean, I want to try to put it in a Buddhist context because that's what we do in a Dharma talk. When I was a kid, I sort of thought about growing up and being an adult, but I never really thought about being old. And I think that might be partly cultural. I mean, I was married to a Chinese man for 16 years, and he talked about being old all the time. I mean, that was sort of something to be looking forward to. And he always said, when we get old, we'll move to China because, you know, everyone treats you really better. You get privileges. So he's 11 years older than I am, and he's still living in Chicago. So I don't know. He decided not to move to China, I guess. But anyway, I thought I would talk about, you know, round number birthdays haven't been particularly potent to me, but this one seems to be. So I have three things that I thought of talking about. Retirement, change, and death. And that's a lot, and I won't get to them all, or they're all the same thing. But to me, it's sort of a mother load. So I'm going to start with retirement. I thought about retiring, and I decided next year. So sometime at the end of next year, I'll stop getting up every morning and going to my job. And that will be a big change. And one of the changes that I'm sort of worried about is that I'll go from a really social person, you know, from dealing with people pretty much all day, every day, to being in a cave, kind of. And I'm actually not afraid of being lonely and hating it. I'm really afraid that I will really, really love it. And that I will, like, go down the rabbit hole and never want to come back and not care whether it's a holiday or not think about current events and just sort of get into that being, being with myself. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I really don't know. I know I have a tendency to that. I know I'm an introvert. I'm not like a borderline introvert. I'm a real introvert. So anyway, maybe it's a spiritual path. I don't know. But I mean, in general, with retirement, I feel like there's an internal competition between filling up and emptying out. So you know, if you take away a 40 or 50 or 60 hour a week commitment, then I see that as like a big hole to fill up. So then people always say, oh, what are you going to do? And then I think, I have no idea. I'll certainly do a lot of the things that I already do, that I love to do, that I always say I don't have enough time to do. Like read and walk and music and Tai Chi and Zazen and so forth. I mean, and sometimes I think I would, you know, take up something else, whatever it would be. but I don't know. I mean, I feel like that would just be replacing one busyness with another busyness. So maybe what I should do would be get deeper into the things that I'm doing rather than try to just occupy myself more. But it's an interesting, I'm sort of enjoying watching myself grappling with this and trying to be honest and trying to make good choices, and probably I won't know what I'll do till I'm actually doing it. I mean, I feel like it's not a bad thing to see what you have the urge to do and follow that urge and explore that. But anyway, on the filling, and so that's the filling up, but then there's the emptying out. I had one more thing about filling up. So the other kind of thing that I really feel like doing is things like sewing on buttons and sharpening pencils and repotting plants. And, you know, there's this like, little humble things that you never take the time for. But then if you think, well, if you have time, so maybe I'll have time. And, you know, it sort of that impulse sort of reminds me of the feeling I have when we're doing temple cleaning here, when you spend a lot of time, you know, straightening your sabutan and making the cushions exactly right. And it feels good to do it, and it feels good once it's done. So it's the other kind of filling up. And then the emptying out, this is sort of a big one too. So I've been collecting a lot of stuff for 65 years. I'm not exactly a hoarder, but I have a fair amount of stuff. And I've been living in my apartment that I'm in now for 20 years, so it's got a lot of stuff. And I feel like I want to sort of systematically go through every single one of those things and look at it and say, keep it, get rid of it. And if I'm going to get rid of it, where does it go? You know, it's like every paperclip and every sock, I feel like, okay, if it's going to be here, I'm going to decide that it's here. And anyway, I don't know if that's, I mean, in some way, it feels a little bit like preparing for death. I mean, I don't mean that in a morbid way at all. I'm just like, it's like, okay, well, you know, just clean up your act. Get rid of your detritus. What is all that stuff? It just feels like purging isn't the right word. It just feels like a, I don't know, brightening or something. It's like, I know someone that just moved from a small apartment into a big house, and then so I walked in. I said, "Wow, this looks Japanese, and it's not very much stuff." And she said, "Yeah, I want to keep it this way." But then she said later, she said, "Oh no, it's starting to fill up." So anyway, so that's. I mean, in some ways, emptying out feels a little bit like renunciation as well. I don't know if that's right. I mean, I like some of those things a lot. I'm not saying I would get rid of them all. I would just decide whether to keep them. But I do feel as if that's a good thing to get used to. It's a good thing to practice. I mean, I sort of feel like doing it. So, anyway. And the other thing I think about that is that, I mean, it would spare my daughter. You know, so she would have to go through all that stuff. I remember when my dad died, I remember going through his stuff. It's like, oh, it was so painful. I mean, it was also so intimate, so maybe it would be depriving her of that, but... You know, I kept a couple things of his, like, oh, I picked two things. I still have them. Every day I see them. You know, one's in the bathroom, one's in the kitchen. So I actually think of them multiple times a day. Maybe that's a good thing. But about 20 years ago, I was just telling this story to Tigan last week. My mother died in January, and then in July, my best friend died, and she was my age. And then the next spring, my dad died. So it's like, okay, I got the idea. I had an aha moment. It was like, I bet I'm going to die. So it's like suddenly dawned on me in a real way. And so that was a big part of when I got more serious about Zen practice. I'd already been sort of a little bit sitting, and I did a lot of sesshins, and I thought a lot about life and death, and you know, what I do for a living is I study nature. So I mean, you study nature, you learn a lot about life and death, and I, you know, I felt pretty good about it. It's like, my image of it is organic matter taking different forms, becoming conscious of itself, taking another form. It's like kaleidoscope. It's a really quite a beautiful sort of feeling about it. And that was very helpful to me, very... not that it was comforting, it was just seemed true. It's like, oh, okay, I feel like this feels right and it feels okay. And if it feels right and it feels okay, then I don't have to worry about this anymore, because I feel like I I get it. And so I'm really grateful for those years of sitting and thinking about that, and also the, you know, the time in the prairie and the woods thinking about that as well. So I'm 65, but I'm really pretty healthy, so I think I'm not going to probably fall over next week. So I'm really not obsessing about this, even though it might sound like it from this talk. I asked Teigen, he said, what chant should we chant tonight? Because I think he asked that of everyone who does the Dharma talk. And I said, oh, the song of the grass hut. But could we sing the well-being? Could we have the well-being dedication as well? Because, you know, death is not an event. It's sort of a process. And so, like, I don't hear very well, and if I don't have these glasses on, I can't see very well, and my knees, I can't really sit very well, for my knee. I ruin my knees, and I have arthritis in my back, and blah, 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 and everybody has that, and it's sort of like a process of getting from whatever you are when you're 7 or something to whatever you are when you're 90, or however you last. And so, so that's the other thing I'm thinking about. And it's daunting, you know. I mean, I wrote this quote down. It's like Montaigne said, "I want death to find me planting my cabbages." I mean, that's sort of the way people think of it, right? So I feel like I came to terms with this thing of I'm going to die, and everyone's going to die, and that's okay. And the world, you know, it's really sort of elegant solution to life on Earth in some ways, you know. Stuff just keeps moving around, but I don't think I'm there yet on the what's going to go after my knees, you know. It's like, so that's the thing I'm sort of struggling with now, and I don't have an answer to it. And then the other thing I just wanted to say is I don't have the least bit of belief in immortality. But I, you know, there's a lot of people who lived a long time ago that are still really important to us. I mean, every time we chant the lineage of the Buddhist teachers, I tear up about that. And, you know, there's Bach and there's Rumi, and, you know, these are ancient people, and they made a... And they're still really around. So I guess in that sense, I do have some belief in immortality. And then even just in a really much shorter term, like, you know, my paternal grandmother was really important to me. She formed a lot of my way of thinking about the world. And so I guess that's the other part of thinking about it. I mean, you know, once I'm gone, some people will remember me, and then they'll be gone, and then that part of me will be gone. But anyway, I wanted to say I am really enjoying this time of consciousness on Earth, and trying to be a plus to my family and my little world. And this has just been a really interesting time of reflection. It feels totally like self-absorption, and I apologize if it seems that way to you. I'm really interested in your thoughts about any of this, and thank you for this opportunity. If Teigen ever asks you to give a Dharma talk, I really recommend that you say yes, because you'll have this opportunity to explore something, and maybe you'll find out stuff you didn't know you were thinking. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much, Laurel. That was very sweet. And thank you for bringing all that up. So we have time. Comments, responses, questions, reflections for Laurel, or just in general, please feel free.
Thanks for a great talk, Laurel. It was really nice. It was just flowing over us, this meditation.
Yeah, I didn't freak anyone out. Oh, good.
I turn 45 in a couple of weeks, and it's interesting to hear you talk about it, because I've been reflecting on how I will be firmly established in middle age.
It's a good time.
I've been really feeling it, you know, like these stages that we go through in our lives. And sometimes you just have a moment where you just, or a time period where you feel this shift. And some of it's social or cultural, and some of it's personal, and some of it's physical, and, you know, all of these different levels. But I don't know, I just wanted to share that too and say happy birthday.
You know, I was going to quote the famous Zen master Warren Zevon, who has, if you don't know his album Life Will Kill You, it's so great. But he, you know, I don't know, do you know his voice? He has this really deep voice, and he says, "It'll happen to you," in this way that just, when you hear it, you never forget it. So if you're like 20-something in the room and you're thinking, this is not about me, listen to Warren, and you'll be reminded it'll happen to you. Anyway.
One of the things I like about this song is we do have people from their 20s up to in our 60s here, so that's very nice.
So I remember the movie Journey of the Universe that we got to see at the film museum.
Oh yeah.
And it talks about the universe being like a light machine where it's just kind of like heading from the great flaring forth from the Big Bang, and it just seems like it's all come together to at some point generate light. And I'm amazed at this point of flaring forth, generating light, and then this question of, well, what do we do now? Which would totally not exist if there is no universal Big Bang and expansion and all those things. Like, the question is here, what do we do now?
Right.
What do we do now? That's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. I sing, and it's like a huge percentage of the choral repertoire is Christian songs about going on to glory and wearing starry crowns. Basically, you know, this sort of really interesting next step of life. That anyway. So, it's an interesting, I don't know. I believe the music, but I don't believe the words. That's what I would think about that. Are there people here that there's their first night? Because we don't talk about death all the time.
I think this is related. I'm turning 30 in about 2 or 3 weeks, and I've been thinking the last couple of days how you kind of touched on it with, you mentioned people living sort of on in our consciousness, like Bach or Rumi or whomever, and I guess I got a little caught up on that because I was thinking, well, what grand contribution am I going to make? And then, but I thought about it some more and I realized that we can't all be remembered, you know? We can't, too many people to remember. So I took comfort in the fact that I don't have to be some outstanding, some memorable name in a couple centuries, you know, if it took some kind of pressure off myself, as long as I'm the most, you know, honest that I can be with myself and with others, or even, you know, just live in that sense. I think I don't know. Yeah.
You might be Rumi.
What's that?
You might be Rumi.
Well, you never know.
You never know. It's true.
You're talking about your paternal grandmother. I think we, you know, Dogen says that when you sit zazen, that influences all the people around you without you trying to, you know, do anything. And I think that's true. We all, who we are, affects all the people around us. And that's so, just like you remember your grandmother, something in that sense continues from the people you know. Even if, you know, you're one of us introverts.
Yeah.
You know, there was like some corporate merger, so I was pushed out the door in approximately May, but almost more like at the end of March. And I actually have found, I don't know, just a lot of things I wanted to study and, you know, topics to work on, some of which might be extremely technical. And I don't know, maybe it's like air molecules that just fill up all available space. but I found that, there was quite a lot of overhead in what I was doing. And getting a lot of that overhead out of the way actually just opened up for what me, it's just a lot of time and opportunity to go direct myself at some of these things that that I wanted to, that I had been sort of in the back of my mind. And I thought about sending my boss in Europe a thank you note for kicking me out. it sort of dawned on me. So it's not that much. You feel like it. There'll be huge amounts of time every day, but in fact, it can fill up.
I'm sure that's true.
You might. And there's other things to pursue that might not be as easy. You know, if you're doing a 40-hour-a-week job, these things. I just see the thing as just sort of as a new vista.
Sounds like you're happy. That's very inspiring.
And part of this is, you know, sometimes there's some dramatic change, but always there's change. We sometimes don't notice it, but we're actually in a season. It's a very seasonal talk. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the beginning of October. Autumn is, you know, here. It's not summer anymore. In some way. So how do we adjust? People have been saying to me that their energy feels different, or they don't have as much energy, or, you know, we notice these things, and so many levels of change.
Yeah, something about the light getting shorter.
Hi.
Plan on traveling,
Excuse me?
Traveling?
Yeah.
You said when you retired, are you planning on maybe traveling, going different places?
Am I going to travel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. I don't know. Here's another idea. I should have written this in the talk. I would like to take a really, really, really long walk, like 100 miles or something. Not in one day, obviously, but, you know, just like, or maybe, I don't know how many, like maybe to Minneapolis. I don't know, I'm making that up. That just seems like a really great thing to do. Get that sort of... it's another percolating idea. Seems like a way to travel that's different from getting in an airplane and waking up in a time zone 12 hours different and culture that's different. You know, it's not that that's a bad thing, but yeah, it's interesting possibility. Are you going for a walk?
I'm going for a walk. One thing is that when you're retired, you don't have to be back that next Monday.
Oh, yeah.
So you can travel on a completely different kind of a dime and at a different rate. It can be trains and it can be... It can make a lot of difference than trying to cut every corner so that it exactly fits so you don't blow out your vacation so you'll have something at the end of the year.
I'm going to have to go out to coffee with you and you can counsel me on this.
I also felt that sense when you were talking about this sort of excitement about being, you know, facing this period of creativity, I guess, almost as though you have to kind of get through this point where you can give yourself permission almost to, you know, to be engaged in this sort of creative act, like walking for hundreds of miles, or precisely because when we work and we hope that we would all find work that we really enjoy. But there's always that quality of our world. We're doing also pay bills, you know, and we don't have much time when we come back from work or tired and so on. But here now we have this opportunity to really just be kind of completely living. But then again, you know, isn't that what we're trying to do even now with all the impositions of our lives as well? You know, trying to live fully in each moment anyway. But it's a different, but clearly that different sense that you're on this verge of. You know, and we're meaning-making creatures, and so I'm hearing you. You know, clearly, I can hear you be doing really fantastic things with that time, but there's almost a nervousness about it too, because you know, now you'll be completely sort of free, in a sense, to pursue those dreams. You know, which perhaps is anxiety-producing too.
Yeah, don't encourage me on that one. No, that's really interesting, though. I mean, I think this thing about sewing on buttons and sharpening pencils is all about saying, well, if you have the leisure or the time or whatever, you could actually find the pleasure in that little thing. I think that's sort of what you're saying, you know. And the, I don't know, you use the word creativity, you know. Mm-hmm. I think we don't, usually. You do. When you sew, you find, I've watched you, you know, you're just like so... I mean, as my sewing teacher, I watched you take such care with each little part of it. And mostly we don't do that. Doing something like that, you're like, out of here. Or whatever.
But I hear you doing that with your life. I hear you doing that with your life, Laurel.
Yeah.
Like in your talk, that was what was striking to me, actually. It's just your engagement with what's in front of you. Yeah. Now 65 is with you and... You're with that process.
Yeah.
It's a little different than sewing.
Right. Yeah. Anyway.
I wanted to add something about walking. When I have that time, I think of that too. And that's really a very traditional practice in Buddhism, pilgrimage. In all Asian Buddhist countries, and I think it's older people, sometimes younger people, but more older people who don't have as much responsibility as they had before, who go on long pilgrimages. Mm-hmm. And I know Hoketsu has done peace walks and long walks, but when I came back from living in Japan and moved to Green Gulch, I had this idea of circumambulating the Bay Area, chanting the Kanzai On. Never did it. I'd love to do that, or you know, walk around Chicago, or you know. Anyway,
didn't somebody like do that?
What's that?
Didn't somebody like walk from like that Chinese Buddhist monastery and vow like?
Oh yeah, yeah, yes, Hung Shur. Yeah, my friend Hung Shur from the City of 10,000 Buddhas in Ukiah from Los Angeles. Two steps and then a full prostration. Took more than a year to do it. But yeah, that's a very traditional practice. And we do walking meditation very slowly here. But, you know, walking is a very good form of meditation. Oh, maybe better than sitting, I don't know. So, anyway, many possibilities. There's a, and I'll just mention a movie I saw since I was talking yesterday about movies. The Way with Martin Sheen is a movie about a pilgrimage in Spain. And it's really lovely, really lovely. Anyway.
Can I just say one more very quick thing about immortality that you were talking about? Because I don't believe in immortality, and which I don't either. But I was, when you mentioned it, I was thinking a bit about that. And how there's a sense to which we are immortal, because we only know our conscious state, and it doesn't actually ever end, because, you know, if it were to end, of course physically it's true, it does end, but we're not conscious of that, of it ending. Mm-hmm. We're only conscious in our living life. So I guess there's a sense to which we are immortal, I guess, because we only ever know, you know, the consciousness that we embody, you know, it's all we ever do know. You know, kind of like sitting here in our zazen, in a sense, we're ever present to life, because that's what we are.
That's so interesting. When I think about immortal, it's like, so the carbon atoms in my body are not going to be destroyed. They're going to be around for a really long time, if not forever, but for a really, really long time. I get that part of it. Like, I don't know. I've been thinking about this river they just found on Mars, you know, the stream bed they just found on Mars. I'm thinking, whoa. When was that a river? Wow, that was a long time ago. Interesting. Anyway, immortal's a funny word. Thank you all so much for your wonderful comments.